Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, joined today by Michael Morris. Let's get into the first news story of today, and we're going to talk a little bit about the politics of the Government of National Unity, particularly with regards to the so-called Bella Bill, a bill that seeks to be a major overhaul of how South Africa's education system works. Now, yesterday we talked about how Ramaphosa seemed to be sort of going ahead with this despite the objections of the DA, who put out a statement suggesting that they may even consider leaving the Government of National Unity if Ramaphosa signs into law the Bella Bill. Some of its key features are, or at least its key controversial features are things like the centralization of decision-making power away from school governing boards in the provincial departments. The DA said that during its negotiations with the ANC had agreed that it would at least review the Bella Bill and possibly send it back to Parliament and make some adjustments. The DA says that it doesn't want to scrap the bill. It simply wants some adjustments to be made to make it in line with the Constitution. President Ramaphosa appears to have basically kind of called the DA's bluff, though. He said he, according to a spokesperson, was not moved particularly by John Steenhuisen's threat that signing the Bella Bill could collapse the Government of National Unity. His spokesperson said, the president is not concerned about the GNU collapsing, but when South Africans see statements and hear leaders issuing threats to the stability of the GNU, it is incumbent upon the president to continuously provide assurance. His spokesperson went on to say that it was disturbing that there are any dispute and that threats are being made to the stability of the GNU. It is disturbing because such threats are not only directed to the president, but they are also directed at the stability of the country. There are threats directed to South Africans. The GNU must remain stable and united, as it is called the GNU for the benefit of the country. It is not for the benefit of any political leader. It has been formulated for the benefit of all South Africans. Now, the DA appears to have sort of backed down a bit. They've said that they will not leave the Government of National Unity simply because the president has signed the Bella Bill into law. However, they do say that even though they don't believe in it, they will implement it, and that rather than challenging this within the political process, where they say they hoped to solve the thing, that they will continue to try and challenge the Bella Bill in the courts. And basically, I think the DA is going to try and have the law declared unconstitutional. Michael, it's a tricky situation, I think, for the DA to be in right now. What do you make of the politics of this? You know, they're sort of in a position where, is this the thing to pull the trigger over about getting out of the GNU? Or must they stick it out? But if they stick it out, are their voters going to call them sort of sellouts? I mean, what is the path forward for them, do you think?
I think it's very healthy that that the DA has been forthright and quite public in stating exactly where it stands. I think this is very useful, not only for their own followers to signal to people that, you know, the party does have a position. It has set out what its concerns are about the Bella Bill in particular. And if you look at the DA statement on it, they suggest actually really quite modest amendments to bring the law into a state that they would be quite happy to live with. and yet they equally underscore the things that are of concern, which are of concern to a great many South Africans. I think simply to pick any particular piece of legislation, and particularly perhaps one like this, which to a lot of South Africans might seem either, you know, relatively innocuous or of no particular concern to them. It is by its nature the Bella Bill and the question of language policy and admission policy at schools. This is necessarily almost something that's going to affect minority communities. So the vast majority of people might not necessarily see this as a, you know, the kind of thing you want to break the government over. And so, you know, if the DA were to do anything rash, it might be seen to be petulant. And I suspect that is something that's being factored into the party's thinking about this. Nevertheless, it is important, I think, that they are making clear that they feel this is a betrayal, at least, of the spirit. We don't really know whether there was anything signed and over exactly what the ANC had promised to do or undertaken to do, whether there was any such undertaking. But nevertheless, the spirit of the statement of intent of the GNU itself, the very foundation of it, was that all the constituent parties, and here we're talking about the two major ones, would work together. And there was a phrase in the element that you read out from the presidency, which I think is critical here, where the presidency was saying the key thing here is the GNU is of benefit to all South Africans. This is actually really precisely what the DA is saying, is that, you know, if there's going to be this benefit to all South Africans, we've got to look at the legislation that is really serving people the best, is going to produce the kind of outcomes we need. We're a country with a very great number of problems. And if you want to find the very serious ones, you need look no further than the education portfolio. This is one that requires a huge amount of reform and of hard work, new ways of doing things. And it's one area where you don't actually want to have a new problem inserted into a mix of crises. So I think the bill potentially could be that. It could be the kind of thing that you don't necessarily want to bring in at the point where, you know, there's so many other things you want to focus on. You want to focus on better teaching, attendance in classes, better run schools, better relationships between parents and schools. A lot of our research has shown that these are some of the key things, allowing school governing bodies to have a very active role in the running of the school. So these are all the things which, even with very poor schools, have turned success stories, have turned them into success stories, produced very good matric results at some of the poorest schools. John Ken Berman, the late John Ken Berman's research in 2018 brought this out. So here we have a bill which is undermining potentially this kind of relationship. It's clearly not the kind of thing we want if benefit of all South Africans is, as the presidency says, the objective here. So yeah, it is a tricky political situation. I think cool heads need to prevail, certainly in the Democratic Alliance. But equally, the ANC needs to be reminded that it emerged from the May election weaker than it's ever been before. And it does actually rely on a collaborative effort. So yeah, we'll see how this plays out. Could be telling for all concerned.
Yes, no, and the DA is now going to be in the very unenviable position of having to implement policies that they explicitly disagree with, and have made a point of very publicly disagreeing with. So not a comfortable position for the party, and I think the DA's basic education minister, who's already got a very tough job ahead of her, is not going to be particularly enthusiastic about this new development. Anyway, let's move on to our next story, and this is from, I'm sure many of our viewers have probably seen a viral video from a guy called Tom London that went viral over the last week about the conditions in Helen Joseph Hospital in Gauteng. And basically he complained about just sort of mistreatment, doctors and nurses who just didn't seem to care. He talked about his own bad treatment, about how he hadn't been moved from sort of like being amongst sort of feces and in the dirt. And he said that the patient next to him was being stabbed with needles and sort of screaming in pain, while the doctors and nurses just talked about, I think, sort of completely oblivious to him, just talking about their cars and holiday plans and things like that. So it caused a big fuss, rightfully so. And immediately everyone has kind of jumped up to try and sort of calm down the situation. The Gauteng provincial health department has said that they are going to be investigating the conditions at Helen Joseph Hospital. It's a bit frustrating to me that these complaints are made by people all the time, from the poorest to the sort of middle-class people who don't have private medical aid, to all retired people. People of all races make these complaints all the time, and they are routinely ignored. And now suddenly a video goes viral, and suddenly, you know, the Gauteng department seems to suddenly care. Aaron Motsoaledi, the health minister at the national level, has also kind of jumped in, and he said that it was unacceptable. And he said that he wanted to also look into the situation because he did not believe that the Gauteng Department of Health should be left to investigate itself, which I think I agree with for once with Minister Motsoaledi. So, Michael, what do you make of this?
I mean, I think the first thing that Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi should be saying is, we are at this moment suspending any plans to introduce the NHI until such time as every single hospital in South Africa is run properly, is clean, is properly staffed, and where they're, you know, higher, much, much higher standards than prevail at the moment. And, you know, I think he would then be a credible individual in the health debate. But to come up with this, to suggest, you know, he's going to send in the ombudsman. Well, it's far too little too late. You know, it's incredible, though, important though it is, to have a proper investigation, as you say, and not leave it to the department itself. It's just not what we expect, what South Africans expect from the Minister of Health of a department that is in such a crisis. So yeah, it's not very impressive. And I think he should be told that, you know, the real problem here is this massively undue emphasis on the pie in the sky plan that is meant to be government run, but here's the demonstrable evidence that the government just cannot do this properly as things stand. That's where the priority ought to be.
No, exactly. I mean, he also tries to, Motsoaledi, to try to suggest that it would be unfair to paint other hospitals as being the same as Helen Joseph Hospital. And I must say that I think that attempt to minimize the scale of the problem here is kind of a little bit insulting. I mean, I personally know two people who didn't receive the care they should have in government hospitals. And while they were very sick and so they did pass away, I don't think that those hospitals entirely were blameless in contributing to their deaths. But yeah, that's just my opinion. And, you know, this is, if you just have to look at the sheer number of medical malpractice suits that have to be settled all the time by the departments of health across the country, to see that this is not some sort of isolated incident, but a very big problem. And just as you say, Michael, you know, now wanting to staple on this huge bureaucratic system that's going to provide ample opportunities for corruption and also loot essentially the private sector's health money is just an appalling response to this problem. NHI is only going to make these problems worse, not better.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. I'm just going to add there that, you know, I was just going to add that, as in the case with schools, where you have, you know, stellar schools, the isolated cases where parents and teachers are really working hard and producing good results. I think in the health sector too. I know that our own hospital here in the Western Cape, the Grootski Hospital, has a very high reputation, and there are others. So it's not as if to say that everybody's rotten and everybody's hopeless, but we know that the scale of the problem is very, very large. Yeah,
I'm friends with a young doctor who recently did her time in the public health system, and there were definitely some doctors like her who worked very hard and cared a lot about their patients, and there were others who just didn't, and there were others who just couldn't because the system was so dysfunctional that it's just difficult to do your job well in that climate, and that's definitely what needs to be fixed before we can even begin to think about something like NHI. All right. Very briefly, there were a bunch of by-elections around the country yesterday. Not that many super exciting results, I don't think. I was rather amused by a DA safe seat in Mdoni in Scottsburg, where the DA last time won 89% of the vote in this ward, and this time they won 98% of the vote, with the ANC being the only party contesting in this particular by-election, only getting the sort of remaining 2%, and sort of I kind of just imagine this kind of almost like North Korea-like results, which I'm sure the DA will be happy with. But the more interesting results were in different parts of KZN, where MK won their third ward in the country in a by-election. This is near Port Shepstone, where the ANC ward councillor was actually a relative of Jacob Zuma's. He then defected to MK. He wasn't then the MK candidate, but clearly he had some sort of influence in the community. MK managed to win the ward with 51%. The ANC dropped from 76% to 39%, and the IFP saw some modest growth from 6% to 8%. The EFF did not stand in this ward. And then we had a bunch of other wards around KZN where the ANC saw a big challenge from MK, but managed to fend them off. The Ward 24 in Nyanda Zulu Bomela municipality, the ANC won the ward with 38% of the vote, down from 57%. MK was close behind with 33% and the IFP at 29%. So very hotly contested election, that one. Michael, it's interesting that, you know, and I've been speculating reasons that I don't think I want to necessarily talk about yet until I can think about them some more, but it's very interesting that MK is definitely winning wards and, you know, making an impact in municipalities across KZN, but they're still not quite matching the levels they got when Jacob Zuma was on the ballot at the national election. What do you make of this?
I mean, you were talking earlier about the complexity of politics in KZN and all the different kind of strata and influences being brought to bear, whether clan, class, political allegiance.
Yeah.
Cultural,
religious factors, affiliation, even
religious affiliation. You mentioned, yeah. So a very interesting terrain. But yeah, I think, you know, the problem perhaps with MK will always be the fact that it was so closely associated with Zuma emerging and being, you know, this defiant figurehead creating this new instrument. But if he's not there, if it's not really about him, there is this much more stratified response to it. So it's going to be interesting to keep an eye on that, see how that plays out. But as you say, without Zuma being the kind of primary focus, it doesn't look as though MK has got that coherence that it might otherwise have had.
Exactly, and I think this is one of the key. You know, there's been an argument made by some people, like Thuli Madonsela, for example, that because MK is a far-left party, that, you know, we can count all of its voters voting for it as strictly endorsing its manifesto and the fact that it's, you know, it's got these radical policies. But I think the reality is, if you actually kind of drill down into MK's voting support, that you find that a lot more of it is to do with Zuma's personal popularity, as you say, Michael, and a lot more of it is to do with sort of a sense of self and identity. And, you know, I would be interested to know whether there anything more than 10% of MK voters had even seen the MK manifesto, or rather they had actually just basically decided to support some politicians they liked because they thought that they had the kind of personalities and temperament they liked. And I think that is a very big problem for the party, because Zuma, while he is very popular in some quarters, he's also extremely unpopular with most of the country. More than sort of half of South Africans do not have a favorable opinion of him. So yeah, the MK party is in a very interesting place, in that it's probably going to be quite a powerful force in the local government election, but I think it may underperform, considering Zuma himself will not be at the front of the line. Okay, yeah. Well, that is... that is all the time we have for our show today. I hope you found it interesting, and we will be back tomorrow with the Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone, and have a wonderful day. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.